Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Restore Australia Radio Show with your host, Mike Holt.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, no matter where you are in the world. Welcome to the Restore Australia Radio Show with your host, Mike Holt. My special guest today is Raywin Hutchins. Raywin, would you mind telling the listeners who you are and which group you represent, please?
Yes, hello, Mike. My name is Raywin and I am Secretary of Place Communities Australia. The group, Mike, is a group of everyday mums and dads, business people, retired people, family, professional people. We're all different. We come from different places in the world, but we're all united with absolutely one objective, and that is to save Australia as what we know it to be, an all-encompassing, democratic, free country with one rule, one law for all. We are losing what we have now, Mike. I grew up in... I'm a baby boomer. I grew up in the best time in Australia. We saw an amazing country. We didn't have to worry about affording to pay our mortgage. We didn't have to worry about protecting our children. We let them go to the park. We didn't have to worry about too much unemployment. And we certainly didn't have to worry about looking behind our backs for the next terrorist attack from somebody who lives down the street, maybe, or who's in our midst. Things have changed dramatically. And we also could speak our mind and tell the truth without being called racist or bigot or bogan or Islamophobe or white supremacist or any one of a number of disparaging and very discriminatory terms. So speaking the truth has now become a lack of freedom, is now become a mistruth. So, no, things are changing and they're not changing for the better.
What do you think is the main driving force behind this?
We think, for a start, ignorance and apathy, political correctness, and it has allowed something come into our country, which is, we believe, a danger, a very real and present danger, and it's called Islam. Why Islam is dangerous is because it is totally incompatible with democracy, human rights, equality. So why bring something into our nation that we know categorically is like oil and water? You put them together, you shake them up, and they will settle out. Islam and democracy will always be different, will always be separate, will always have a problem. And yet we now are encouraging the establishment of more mosques and more Islamic schools. We see Dawah on the street. We see our young, vulnerable children get radicalized and carry out acts of violent jihad. This is not the Australia that we and I want for my children and grandchildren, and I dare say you don't want it either, Mike.
You're right there. Time to take another break. This time I'm going to play a song by Dion. Back in the 50s, Dion was a heartthrob and a big superstar. And like many rock stars, he got involved in drugs and went way down. And then around the 90s, he got rehabilitated, and he came back and recorded a new album called Yo Frankie. This is one of the tracks on that album, Loving You Is Killing Me.
Fighting inside my brain, a bomb about to blow.
right to explode. It's a mad, bad feeling, and there's no way out. No one's going to rip on. It's a rough, rough tremor, and it's got me worn out. I'm like a leaf.
Show with your host Mike Holt, and my guest today is Raven Hutchins from Safe Communities. Raven, tell us a little bit about the Safe Communities, how it got started, and what your goals are.
Safe Communities got started when it became obvious that we were going to have a mosque in our own backyard.
Which is in Maroochydore.
This was in Maroochydore. We have been studying Islam for 5 or 6 years at this point in time, reading the Quran, the Hadith, the Sirah, reading Islamic history to try and understand why there was this disconnect and why there was these divisions in our society. We're told to have diversity, but diversity doesn't bring cohesion. It actually is bringing division. And with the case of Islam, it is bringing division. Every other religious sect in our country manages to become part of our wonderful tapestry of multicultural Australia. They add to it. They don't detract from it. They contribute. They don't take. So Safe Communities got started because we decided that we needed to have a collective community body of people who could talk to councillors, who could talk to politicians and exercise our democratic rights as sovereigns of this nation to say, we want to determine what comes into our community, and we don't believe this is safe for our community. So we started Safe Community, and as the name implies, the reason behind it is to keep our communities and our nation safe. Mm. So Islam is one of the challenges, but there are other challenges that we do also address, support and fundraise for, which are domestic violence. We see an incredible increase, which is totally unacceptable and it's shameful in Australia. And also the ICE, drug and alcohol fueled violence epidemic, particularly amongst our young children. We see violent crimes committed by people on drugs. So we decided Safe Communities was a collective body. Since then, we have grown exponentially. We have approximately 700 members just here on the Sunshine Coast. But there are approximately 9 fully operational groups around the country and approximately 15 online groups that run to the same operations manual or the same code of conduct. So we maintain that if we apply the law, we apply common sense, we present evidence, it is compelling, and we ask our leaders to look at it and make the right decisions for our country.
How has that worked so far? Are you making progress in getting, say, for instance, the local councils to stop considering approving mosques or at least take into account the community concerns?
Mike, that's a really good question. And we have worked with council for the last 12 months, lobbying them on a regular basis. I have to say that we are very happy with the way that council has listened to community concerns. We have also suggested that council look at their planning laws, which are happening right now. The planning laws in most councils are inadequately to effectively protect community. In fact, they oftentimes cut community out. When communities object, they end up in the planning and environment court at great expense.
Yeah.
So there, it doesn't really matter how much we lobby councillors, unless the legislation in the local planning laws changes, and ultimately the state planning laws, which is the Sustainable Planning Act 2009, changes in respect of place of worship applications, we're going to get more of the same. So we're starting our last 12 months with council has been incredibly positive. We're hoping for some changes to occur. The process of changing legislation is a slow one. It doesn't happen overnight, but the councillors themselves have moved very much understanding community concerns and understanding the problems that mosques do bring in, especially non-Muslim communities. Such things as drop in real estate prices, increase in crime, higher dependency on welfare and unemployment results, of course. These are socio-demographic changes that totally change an area, and by and large, residents have not had a say. So we say that's unacceptable. We say things have got to change, and it starts with legislation.
Well, that's a good point, actually. It does start with legislation, and of course, city councils or local councils are not a level of government. They're not an official level of government.
Correct.
So they have no power to legislate, and therefore they must obey the laws, the state planning laws, just
yes.
as you and I have to.
Yes.
How are you addressing this problem?
We are addressing the problem starting with the local planning scheme. Now, councils do have control over what areas they designate for example, light industry, for retail, for residential. They do plan their own scheme, but it has to comply with the state planning law, as you so rightly say, Mike. So they can either apply a code of criteria to places of worship, or they can apply an impact assess. Impact assess means that community does have a say, they do have a voice, but we are also concerned that that doesn't go far enough, because we're not just now talking about planning, issues of drainage and noise and ground shaking and parking, traffic flows, those and plumbing. We're not just talking about those hard issues. We're talking a little higher. We're talking child safety, and we're talking national security. And this is where planning laws don't adequately address it. It's right outside of their jurisdiction. So we're working in that area to tie some ends together so council can better work and protect community and apply the will of the community in a legal way. Give them the tools whereby they can do their job much better, in other words.
Okay, it sounds like you've got your work cut out there.
Yes.
Yeah, it is a big job, but I'm glad you're doing it. Each week we read a passage, or what they call a surah, from the Quran. This week we're reading Surah 4, verse number 95. Not equal are those of the believers who sit at home, except those who are disabled by injury or are blind or lame, etc., and those who strive hard and fight in the cause of Allah with their wealth and their lives. Allah has preferred in grades those who strive hard and fight with their wealth and their lives above those who sit at home. Unto each, Allah has promised good paradise. But Allah has preferred those who strive hard and fight above those who sit at home by a huge reward. This passage criticizes peaceful Muslims who do not join in the violence, letting them know that they are less worthy in Allah's eyes. It also demolishes the modern myth that jihad doesn't mean holy war in the Quran, but rather a spiritual struggle. Not only is this Arabic word, mujahadina, used in this passage, but it is clearly not referring to anything spiritual, since the physically disabled are given exemption.
The Hadith reveals the context of the passage to be in response to a blind man's protest that he is unable to engage in jihad,
which would not make sense if jihad meant an internal struggle for the soul. There are four types of jihad: jihad against oneself, jihad against Satan, jihad against the hypocrites and kuffar, that's the disbelievers, jihad against the leaders of oppression and innovation, and finally, jihad against the disbelievers, which is obligatory in four cases, which are when the Muslim is present in a jihad situation, when the enemy has come and attacked a Muslim land, when the ruler mobilizes the people, they must respond, as ISIS is doing now with their so-called Grand Mufti, and four, when a person is needed and no one else can do the task except him. And remember that all Muslims are bound by the Quran and the Hadith to attack all those who refuse to become Islamic. You're listening to the Restore Australia radio show with your host Mike Holt, and my guest today is Raven Hutchins from Safe Communities. As we discussed last year, when all of this started to blow up with the mosque approval in the wind at that stage, we soon realised that we didn't have any power really to influence the decision. Now that decision has been made and the mosque is there, how is that going? What is happening as far as the council and the mosque is concerned?
Yes. The local mosque at Marichidor, the council approved their application under code assessment. So that means that it wasn't impact. The Safe community were not considered. They had to do that under the law, and they could not have done anything else. Had they have disallowed the application, the applicants would have taken council to the court. So council approved their application, which was a limited application with limited hours. So council generously gave them some more hours than they asked for. Within days of approving that application, the applicants came back and they said, oh, we got that wrong. We really meant we needed it 24/7. And oh, by the way, we want 60 school children visits a month. So at that stage, council said, well, we've already approved your application. This is a total change. Within hours of that comment happening, we are led to believe, and this is hearsay, that council received a court summons, and the applicants are now taking council to court for approving the application that they lodged. But the application didn't actually reflect what they really wanted. They put in a mini application in the hope that they would get a carte blanche, yes, and not a conditional approval. So this is where we believe that the original application was a smokescreen or something else, and this is how the law gets used against us. So the latest information we have is that the applicants are taking counsel to court for approving their application, which is in anybody's book ludicrous and misuse and abuse of our legal system.
Well, you know, they made the application and they got what they wanted. Why are they complaining?
They're complaining because they can, and because they can use the law in a vexatious way against council that pay by ratepayers' money, and they are funded by taxpayers' money, and of course with an bottomless pit of Middle East Saudi money. So they can. They do it because they can, Mike, and I do believe it was the application that was put in was an attempt to misdirect the attention, and then as a result they've come back and said, no, the application wasn't correct. We meant we needed it 24/7, not just limited hours in the week. So we're greatly concerned that there was an attempt to mislead the public, but the very concerning issue of this is the 60 school children visits each month.
Where are these school kids are coming from?
They're coming from our local state schools. Now, we don't
know. Over my dead body.
Well, this is it. Most parents don't know that this is happening, and we need to let the schools know. We need to let the parents know. We need to let the public know, because we don't have to think back many weeks ago to the 15-year-old at Parramatta going to high school who attended the Parramatta mosque, became radicalised, was handed a gun in the women's section of the mosque where there were no CCTV cameras, and he went and killed Curtis Chen, a police employee, a 58-year-old man going home at the end of his day. So this is what can happen in mosques. They are the conveyor belt for violence, and there is a direct link between radicalisation and of our vulnerable young children. That young boy was only 15 years old. So we say taking young school children into mosques is the start of a journey to conversion and then to radicalisation. And the end result of that is more Islamic violence in our nation.
Do you have any plans to counter this and put a stop to it?
We are working on a strategy. Yes, Mike, we are. It is something that we can't talk about publicly, unfortunately. Right. But if we are successful in our endeavours, we would be happy to talk to you again and share it with everybody. Because if we can protect our community here using the law, other communities can follow suit, and we can start to put something on the ground that is legal, that has good strength, and that community won't get sidelined and also victimised, basically.
Mm. Well, you know that Restore Australia will support you to the hilt in this, and anything we can do to help, let me know.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate that.
Time for a bit of a laugh. Let's listen to Mighty Mo. Mighty Mo was surrounded by a large crowd in Mecca, his hometown. Mo stood proud to tell them of his strange dream.
My friends, I stand before you to tell you of these wondrous sights I have seen. A gift from our great, our one, our only Allah.
You mean that lump of rock some of our crazier neighbours worship?
No, no, no. Allah is the one true God.
Hey, rubbish. I saw Allah the other day. He's a lump of rock that represents some moon god.
Silence. I will have you stoned for your blasphemy.
Stoned? Yeah, man. Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
Hey, Mighty Mo, you were talking about this Allah dude's Sharia law. I got a question for you.
Yes, you piece of camel dung. What do you want to know?
Well, peace and love to you too, bro. Oh, man, that shit is so smooth. Hey, Mo, I married the hottest babe in town. When she grows up, she'll have all the men chasing after her. I want to sew her up so she can't have sex with anyone else. Can you recommend someone to cut off her genital bits?
Ah, yes, my doobie-sucking friend. My wife, Khalija bin Kawalaid, is an expert.
Is she the one who cut off your nuts, oh Mighty Mo? Is that why you keep having visions?
Ignore him, Mighty Mo. You rock.
Hey, I got a question too. What should I do if I catch me wife with another man?
Has she been playing around on you already, Abdul? Surely you just got married not a week ago.
No, 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 Mighty Mo. I just like to hear you describe the gory bits of Sharia law. It gives me goosebumps just hearing how creative you can be.
It pleases Allah to speak through me, so I will let him answer instead. One moment while I call him.
Who calls me?
It is I, O brilliant star of the heavens, my great Allah.
Oh, that's okay then. I thought you was one of those pesky houris that keep begging me for some.
Shh. Oh, great Allah. I have not revealed these houris to my adoring fans yet. Oh, perfume of the gods, beloved of the houris, denizen of the stars, hear my plea.
Ah, for Christ's sake, get on with it, you gibbering fool. What do you want?
Oh, great Allah.
Yeah, yeah, you said all that. Get to the point.
Oh, all right then. You are an impatient god, aren't you?
He thinks I'm a god, but I'm really just a voice inside his head. This man is crazy.
My beloved Allah, can you tell me what I should decree for a woman who cheats on her husband?
Let me think. Okay, here's what you do. First, you take the man she has slept with, and you bury him up to his waist in the desert sand. Then you invite your friends and neighbors to stone.
But I want to punish him, not get him stoned, O mighty Allah.
Fool, not that sort of stoned. I mean, you pick up rocks and you throw them at him until he is dead.
Oh, that sounds like fun. Thank you, thank you, thank you, oh most inventive Allah.
Fool, I have not finished yet.
There's more?
Of course there is. What do you want to do with the woman?
Oh, mighty Allah, surely you do think of everything. Since she has been soiled, I will kill her husband with a blow of my beautiful scimitar, thus freeing her from his unwelcome of. After all, she needs lots of work to bring her back.
Use your wand.
Sounds like a good plan to me. So be it. That is what you shall announce to your followers. Write it down in the Quran. Any woman who is unfaithful to a husband may be taken as a sex slave. That should stop them playing up. Oh, and add this too. You can also take her out and bury her up to her chin, and then stone the. Tune in next time to hear more adventures.
You're listening to the Restore Australia radio show with your host Mike Holt, and my guest today is Raven Hutchins from Safe Communities.
Tell me then, what activities have you undertaken so far with the members? What else do you do?
Well, Mike, our main goal is to educate and to inform people about things that we see are unsafe for our community. And there's a lot of information in the public space about domestic violence and drug and alcohol fuel violence, but what we see in the public space is a lot of misinformation, deliberate misinformation, from people like Walid Ali, for example, who is on the air on a frequent basis, and he's not helping Australians better understand Islam. In fact, it's the reverse. So there's a lot of deliberate misinformation in the public space, some of it paid for by taxpayers' money in the form of Islamic Dawah pamphlets advising the public how good Islam is.
So why are we paying for that?
Because the Islamic community get an enormous amount of grants. Their schools get funded four times the amount of money than our non-Islamic schools. There is a distinct and deliberate, push to make them feel at home in Australia by putting more money their way, if I can say it in those terms. So we want to try and counter this information with facts and evidence, present it to people and say, well, this is the evidence, these are the facts. And we only use the best of scholars. We fly the best scholars in. We put on public forums. We invite the media, the politicians, the counsellors, the public. And we say, listen to this person, listen and learn. And then if this is something that you want, that you consider as an issue that might be a problem to our children and our grandchildren's future, well, let's get active. It's no sense having the information and the knowledge unless you do something about it.
Yeah,
so
right,
we hold public forums. That's one of the big things we do. We've distributed over 1,500 books, The Story of Muhammad, which is a 101 on Islam. It's an easy read. The Quran and the Hadith and the Sirah are difficult reads. The Story of Muhammad is an easy read. It quotes the Quran, but it puts everything into a story context so you can understand what was happening in the life of Muhammad. If you understand the life of a Muhammad, you understand Islam very, very well. So we educate with books, we educate with public forums, but we also lobby. We lobby politicians, state and federal politicians. We present evidence. We leave information. We ask them to read it. We ask them to comment on.
I was going to ask you, how has that worked? Have they been supportive? And are any of the politicians now changing their stance and coming on board?
Mike, I'm happy to say that some of them are. I'm happy to say that some of them are. And we, as you know, are not a political party. We're not a religious group at all. But we support individuals. We support men and women, strong, honest men and women who will stand up for Australia, who will support and apply our constitution, who will recognise and support our Australian common law, who will oppose Sharia law. We need good, strong men and women in Canberra. So our lobbying to the politicians is, number one, to assist them in their understanding. We don't know it all, so we use the best of information. It's not our information. We talk from the most credible sources. We ask them to read it and understand and get back to us. And I have to say, we're greatly pleased to say that some of the politicians have listened and learned and have changed their stance and as a result changed the way that they act. On the other hand, there are those that steadfastly refuse to even read the information and who will not listen to us. When we go to lobby, we will be silent. So we are making some wins, but we've still got a long way to go.
We'll take a short break now, Raven, and listen to a song by a group called Ween, Japanese Cowboy.
Like a Japanese cowboy or a brother on skates, like a blizzard in Georgia or a train running late, I call out your name, girl, in the heat of the night. And nobody answers, 'cause something ain't right. Breakfast at Shawnee's at $2.99. Save me some money, it eased up my mind. I'm walking in circles and feeling the pain. I'm tossing and turning and crying in vain. Like a Japanese cowboy or a brother on skates, like a blizzard in Georgia or a train running late, I call out your name, girl, in the heat of the night. And nobody answers, 'cause something ain't right. Here we go. I'm riding at midnight and crossing the line. From the rain in my windshield and the tears in my eyes, now the bedroom is empty and I spent my last dime. And the lovers are leaving, I got nothing but time. I got you on my mind. Like a Japanese cowboy or a brother on skates. Like a blizzard in Georgia, or a train running late. I call out your name, girl, in the heat of the night, and nobody answers, cause something ain't right.
That was a bouncy song by Ween. I had a lot of people ask me to play more of Ween, so yes, you'll be hearing more of them in the future. This is your host, Mike Holt, on the Restore Australia radio show, and my guest today is Raven Hutchins, the Secretary of Safe Communities. And Safe Communities now has chapters all around Australia, and they've grown very fast, and they're doing a great job helping to educate people and bring about law changes so that we don't have these mosque applications anymore. Raven, you mentioned before that you're having a little bit of trouble getting some of the politicians and councillors to listen to you.
So now these people who are refusing to even get educated, can we out these people before the next election, and let's make sure that people know what their stance is? Because I'm pretty sure from my conversations with people all over the place, a majority of Australians do not want this a majority of Australians do not want Islamisation of our nation. And therefore, we should not be supporting politicians who do.
I 100% agree. Safe Communities, the position of Safe Communities is that our politicians should uphold the law, should respect our constitution. Everyone is equal underneath it. There is no room for another foreign legal system, as in Sharia law, for example. Any indications of Sharia law coming into our country should be removed. With the politicians who will not listen, before the next election, we are starting on another round of lobbying to survey these politicians, and we will campaign against them. And hopefully we have good men and women who will stand up and run in their positions. And those are the people that we will support, irrespective of political party, that we support independents and men and women. Now, they may be independents themselves, or they might belong to a political party that has a platform of policies that support Australian values, our culture, our laws, and even our successful multiculturalism model that has worked incredibly well until we poured Islam into the mix. And like oil and water, as I said before, it is not mixing. The others are like cordial. They have come into our community and they've made us a much more colourful country. So it's not multiculturalism per se. It is the group of people that have used multiculturalism to their advantage and to our unfortunate disadvantage. So
you could say we are a very cordial people.
You could say we're a very cordial, colourful people, Mike, but we're not an oily people. Oil and water don't mix, and
that's
what we've got with Islam, unfortunately.
Yes. Well, it sounds like you're doing a great job. I must say, I went to one of your events. Kim Vuga was speaking, and I was very impressed with the organisation. It was very well done. You had people everywhere. You had good snacks.
The ladies can cook quite well, Mike.
Yes, I know. You've proved that to me many times. But, the whole thing was very well done. It went as smooth as clockwork, and I was very impressed with that.
We'll take another break now. And I'm going to play a song that I've wanted to play for a long, long time. It's quite long. It's about 5 minutes long, but it is absolutely beautiful. This is Stairway to Heaven by Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd. Have a listen. You'll want to hear it again. This is the Restore Australia radio show with your host Mike Holt, and my guest today is Raven Hutchins from Safe Communities. Raven, what do you think has gone wrong with our political system that we have no control over things like mosques getting built and other projects that go ahead without our approval?
Well, our constitution gives us that say, but most politicians want to finalise that constitution. So I have the full annotated constitution, Quick and Garran, on my desk, and I refer to it frequently. And you're dead right. We are a representative democracy, which means that our leaders should represent us, represent a party of ideals and ignore the people. Once they get to Canberra, they forget who voted them into power. So applying our constitution and putting back the power into the hands of the people is most important. Mm. And we have gone quite far off the track when it comes to the running of our country. We've taken out of our education system, we've taken out civics, we've taken out Western civilization, we've taken out how our parliament works, we've taken out the fact that we even have a constitution.
Yes.
And deliberate or otherwise, the end result is we have produced a whole generation, or maybe even two, of children who don't understand the basis of our democracy, how it came about, what our constitution is, what rights and responsibilities we have as Australian citizens and sovereigns of this nation. So there is a big need to do a rebalance, and this is what we are saying. We need a rebalance in Canberra, and at the moment we're listing very strongly to the left and all political parties. So we need a rebalancing of the whole political spectrum in Canberra. So that's we see that as an important aspect, and people who will stand up and apply the rule of law, who will honour the constitution, who will give back the power to the people, are people that we need in Canberra.
Right. Well, you know, Turnbull is the best Labor Prime Minister we've ever had.
Well, the fact that the Labor Party elites actually like Turnbull is a worrying concern for Liberal voters and definitely for Conservative voters. I think there's a vacuum that's been created on the right in the Conservative area of politics, and we need to, as I say, rebalance. There is a duopoly in Canberra, and it's called Labor and Liberal, or else Woolies and Coles. We need an LD. We need something to rebalance up the Woolies and Coles of politics. We need a third balance there, because people don't have a real choice. Conservative voters have a large range of right Conservative parties who we all know who they are, but we do need a strong voice in that arena of politics.
Mm. Well, of course, you mentioned before the constitution and how it's being ignored, and you said something like it was, whether it was deliberate or not. It was deliberate, and it started with Gough Whitlam. But
yes, I agree.
The rot started long before that. In fact, it started on the day we became a federation. And that was because the constitution, as it was written, gave only the politicians the power to initiate a referendum. And that's been our problem all the way down the line. We, the people, can vote to change our constitution, but we can't start a referendum to do that. And that's where the problem lies. So
that's exactly right. You are correct there. And unless we have politicians who will do it for us, and so far they have displayed quite a remarkable reluctance to do so.
Yes, because it would take away their power. And yes. I sat in the... I was a member of the Liberal Party a couple of years ago before the elections, and I sat in party meetings with Ted O'Brien, in fact, and he categorically said, no, we would never support CIR, citizens-initiated referendums. Yes. And yet when I went to a state conference and I spoke to the president of the Libs, he said, well, in principle, we would support it, but you would have to submit it through your local chapter, and then it has to work its way up. Well, with Ted O'Brien in there, who does not believe in it, there was no chance that I was ever going to get this bill through to the stage where it could be submitted to Parliament. And that's why I left the Libs and then went and joined One Nation.
Yes.
And I love what One Nation stands for, The only problem was when I stood for them, they had no money. They had been more or less moribund for years.
Yeah.
Pauline had left the party and they had no money. So I basically funded my own campaign, which was piteous before what Clive Palmer put into his campaign. So there was no way I was going to win. But the unfortunate thing was my preferences went to Clive Palmer because One Nation said to me, you know, you've got to preference Clive Palmer over LNP, because LNP had always promised One Nation to preference them up the top and they never did.
Yeah.
So it was a bitchy thing to do, and it lost us all a good representative in Parliament, although I wouldn't say Ted O'Brien would be a good representative, but he'd have to be much better than Clive, who is basically a submarine. He surfaces when he wants to make a name for himself and nothing else. And
that's an interesting adjective to use for him.
Yeah, well, his predecessor, the Lib member before, was also called the submarine, because that was what he was like. But
right.
After Clive was elected, Charles is my chairman of the Foundation for National Renewal, which is our not-for-profit. Charles and I approached Clive's office and asked to see him as his, you know, he's our representative. Well, they flat refused. He said, no, I haven't got time to talk to you. Well, what sort of a representative is that?
And it is no representative at all, Mike, and this is where we need to point out to people. People become disengaged with because they think everybody is just like the other person. They have a very low opinion of politicians because of that scenario that you've just explained. Mm. But I hate to say this, but sometimes we get the politicians we deserve. A lot of people go to the polling booth and it's like a eeny, meeny, miny, mo,
yes.
Situation of who I'm going to vote for. They don't put a lot of thought into it. Their vote is incredibly important, mm. and it is a privilege. They treat it like a disadvantage or a task. It is a huge privilege that they have got a chance to put their one vote in. And that one vote, if everyone thought the same way as it's only one vote, it would be a very, very poor day indeed. So I think Australians have to start engaging with the political process. And this is why we're encouraging members of our group, especially the younger members, to get engaged in the political system, to put up their hands and become engaged, be independent voices for the community that they represent, to read the Constitution, to understand the law, and to become the next generation of politicians who have integrity and honesty and who want to do the right thing. So we get sometimes the politicians we deserve because people are too busy. They don't think that politics plays a part in their life, that politics is not going to affect their footy game, it's not going to affect their barbecues, it's not going to affect them buying a new car. They are absolutely so wrong. And I often explain politics like this. The Canberra, the politicians or the government is in the driver's seat of a big bus and we're on the side of a cliff. It's a very, very narrow road and it's a very steep drop off into a huge, big, dangerous ravine. So the driver in the seat is the government. We're sitting in the passenger seat. Most of the people are on their iPhones, they're reading magazines or books and they're chatting. There's only a few people in the bus and they happen to be down the back who's watching where the driver is steering this big bus called the country of Australia.
Mm.
And we see this driver, he's sitting in the seat and he's steering towards the edge of the cliff. And a few people in the back are jumping up and down saying, hey, pull it to the right, you're going too far to the left. Pull it to the right. Now, if the driver has got his headphones on and he's listening to music and he can't hear and he's got his sunnies on and he can't really see too much, we've got two options. We either tap him on the shoulder and take his earplugs out so he can hear us, take his ear shades off so he can see us, and say, mate, you're going in the wrong direction. Pull the bus to the right because see, there's the edge of the cliff. We're about to go over. Or we get him out of the driver's seat. We put the driver in place who knows what's happening, knows who's about to drive, and knows the destination. The one at the moment doesn't. So the bus is going off the edge because people are disengaged. They are disengaged with politics, and this is how we explain it.
Oh, good analogy. Raywin, can I ask you to help us educate people about looking at the policies. You know, a lot of people say, oh, I just vote for the Libs because I always have, or I've always been a Labor man. And I get a lot of people saying, I've always been a Labor man, but now I'm going to vote for the Libs. But they don't really know what the Libs even stand for.
Yes.
And it's six of one and a half a dozen of the other. You're voting for the same thing, basically. Neither party really offers anything to our benefit, and they don't offer us the true democracy. So we need to get the word out there before you say, I'm going to jump in and I'm going to vote for this party or that. Learn what they stand for.
I absolutely, absolutely agree. I couldn't agree more, Mike. And I can associate and understand what these people are saying, because I used to be in that position not that very long ago.
Mm.
I would always say, I've always voted this way and nothing is going to change me. I'm unhappy with a lot of these policies and I don't like that politician because he's ignorant, arrogant, he won't listen, but I've always voted this way. I cannot bring myself to vote another way. That has to change. If we keep on doing the same thing, the meaning of insanity is to expect a different outcome. So if we keep on doing what we've always done without questioning ourselves and our motives and our actions, we'll get more of the same thing. And at the moment, we're getting more of what we don't want, and that's more of Islamic terrorist attacks on our nation, where our budget, our federal budget, is bulging under the weight of paying huge amounts of money to keep us safe and lots of new government departments and surveillance, and we're following around 475 persons of interest 24/7. So unless it is ridiculous. They should not be allowed free in our communities, posing a risk and having to have AFP and ABO officers on their tail 24/7. That is also insane. But getting back to the politics, you need to know, number one, what your person representing you is all about, what they understand, what their modus operandi is, and then you need to look at the party's politics. Policies. And the only way you can do that is to actually to ring him up and make an appointment and go and see him. So that's not absolutely possible for a lot of people. So what safe communities are going to do is we are going to try and engage with all of the federal members, the MPs, and the candidates who will be running and ask a series of questions, rather like an exam, to get their personal opinion and that of their party in straight forward answers. And then we're going to give them a safety rating. Are you five-star safe for our community, or are you a one-star and to be avoided at all costs? So safe communities are going to put a series of questions, and we did this with the local council, with the state election on 31st of January this year.
That's a great idea.
Get a safety rating or get a series of questions. I liken it like this, Mike. I used to work in corporate life. I had to have a medical, I had to go to the company doctor, I then had to have a stress test, and then I had to have an aptitude test to see if I can join the dots and add up before I was considered for an application for the job. Now, our politicians are also employed in a job. We're employing them to represent us in Canberra, and we're paying their wages. But how many times do we not know if they even have the abilities to carry out their job? We don't, because we don't know who they are. We don't know their background. We don't know their education levels. We don't know their understanding. We don't know their values, their morals, their ability to negotiate. We know none of these things. But yet we appoint them to drive the bus, to run the business of Australia. That is nuts. It's pure insanity. If we're expected to put a CV in for a job and then go through a series of tests to make sure that we can jump through all the hoops that a company demands we jump through, why aren't we asking the same of our politicians, our elected representatives who are working for us in the Beach Council?
Well, the problem, of course, is that they are not accountable to us at the moment. They're accountable to the political party, and the political party, as long as they adhere to the party line, they don't care. And that's where we have ended up, because we, the people, have dropped the ball.
Yes, you're right. But ultimately, Mike, as they got voted in, they also can get voted out.
Yeah.
And the party will not protect the people from voting them out. The party can do what they like, but if the people ultimately vote with their feet, those people will not even be able to see the party line. They won't be in Canberra. So they either get on board They either understand that Australians now have had enough of this populist politics. Mm. Who is the most popular prime minister? Who looks the best on camera? Who can speak the best in front of a mic? We've had enough of that nonsense. Yeah. We can see right through it. We want honest men and women who will tell the truth, who know their job, who are fit for purpose. And we use this term fit for purpose because some of them are patently unfit for purpose. And we see that every day in the news. So yeah, enough is enough. When we say it's time that the people became engaged in the political arena and made sure that we got the politicians that we deserve, not the ones that we inadvertently, oh dear, I'll just tick this box, got and put in power.
Very good. Do you have anything else you'd like to talk about? It's getting close to the end of the show, but we still have some time.
Mike, look, I greatly appreciate the opportunity to speak to you and to your listeners. Safe communities is all about the greater good. None of us aspire to be a person in the public arena. We want to keep our politicians honest and hold them to account, but we also are absolutely determined to keep our communities safe. And the reason we exist, as I say, is for the greater good, in particular our children and grandchildren, because if we don't do it now, they are going to have to deal with our inaction. And if we know something is wrong, we don't stand up and do the right thing, that's on our conscience. And, you know, the old saying that bad things happen when good men do nothing, it applies in this instance. So we just say to people, if you want a safe community, you've got to get knowledgeable, you've got to get educated, and then you've got to get active. If you don't do anything, if you don't start to talk to your councillors, if you don't start to talk to your politicians, if you don't start to talk to your neighbour and say, what do you want for your country? Are you comfortable with the level of terror that we have to live with from day to day? Are you happy with our government's handling of the economy? If we don't start having these political discussions and if we don't start talking about things that matter, and we keep them to ourselves, it's useless information. Information without action is futile. So we're saying to people, good people of Australia, if you want a safe community, if you want a safe nation, get on board and do something positive for your community.
Fantastic. Raven, thank you very much for coming on the show today, and I hope our listeners have learned a lot. And please, if you are going to vote in the next election, look up the policies. Find out who the man is or woman that you're going to vote for or who'd like to vote for. And if they don't measure up, don't vote for them. What do you do if you haven't got someone to vote for? Well, that's the problem, isn't it? We need good people to stand for election. So please take the time and make sure that you choose the best person for the job. Thank you all, and thank you, Raven, once again. And this is my fault, signing off.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Goodbye.
I'd like to thank all the listeners for tuning in again. You'll catch us again next week. Before I go, I'd like to say a few words about Islam compared to Western society. You'll notice throughout our radio shows and very often on Facebook when we're talking about the differences between Islam and Western culture, that the driving force behind what we call the Patriot Movement is love. Love of our country, love of our fellow man, love of our way of life. Now, if you've read the Quran, you'll find the word love in there perhaps, you know, 6 or 7 times. And each time it refers to the love of jihad, love of Allah, love of Muhammad, but it does not mention love of your fellow man. So this is how we can beat Islam. We have laws in place, but those laws are driven by our love for order, safety, and the love of our fellow man. And if we break those laws, the punishments are quite severe because we want to protect our fellow man. So remember this when you go out there to educate people, to talk to people and find out what they think about it. Remember, keep love in your hearts. Our enemies hate us, and you can never win when your heart is filled with hate. Love our nation and love your fellow man, and we will win. We will protect our Judeo-Christian heritage. We will protect our laws. We will protect our nation, and we will protect the future for our children. Thank you very much for listening. I'll see you again next week.
This is the Restore Australia radio show with your host, Mike Holt, signing off. Until next time. Here's a message to Islam. You can try to deny us our freedoms and our rights. You can try to impose your idiotic ideology on us, but you never will, because we believe in freedom, and we will fight you to your death.